Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Rachel Joy. Welcome, Rachel. I am thrilled to have you with me.
Thank you, Gloria. I'm thrilled to be here.
Regular listeners may know that there's been a small hiatus over the last month, month and a half. And so as I was thinking about it, I couldn't think of a more perfect person to pick this back up with than Rachel. So we're going to get started. And Rachel is our church administrator, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that later in the interview. But I just wanted to make it real clear that this is a really important person at Portland Mennonite Church, and more so during the pandemic than ever. So I'll thank you now, and I'll thank you again at the end for all you've been doing to keep us connected. Rachel, I don't know very much about you, but I think you may be a native Oregonian. Where were you born?
Yeah, so I'm the first person in my family to have been born in Oregon. And I did used to think of myself as a native Oregonian until I was a teenager and I learned a little more about the history of this land. So I don't call myself a native Oregonian, even though I was born in Oregon. But my family, my parents met here in Oregon in the early 60s and came back, and I was born here. And I've lived most of my life here in Portland, Oregon.
Where did they go in between when they were here before? Do you know?
Yeah, so they came here. They met at Multnomah School of the Bible doing a one-year mission certificate. And as soon as they got married, my dad actually joined the Air Force. This was in the early 60s. And he got stationed in Japan. And so they spent 4 years in northern Japan and then came back to Massachusetts. So in Japan, my oldest brother was born. And then they came back to Massachusetts and my next brother was born. And then they moved to Oregon. And then I was born here.
So is it just the three of you?
It is.
I'm sure that your family was delighted when it turned out that you were a girl.
They were. Yes, it's true.
Since you've lived in Portland most of your life, that means that you went to school here. Did you go to public school?
I did. I went to Maplewood Kindergarten in sort of the Garden Home area. And then I went to Metropolitan Learning Center from first grade through eighth grade. And then I was at Lincoln High School for half a year. And then back to MLC for the rest of my ninth grade year. And then I was at C.E. Mason School of Arts and Communication, which has been renamed, I think, Arts and Communication Magnet Academy in the very early years of that school out in Beaverton.
So the school that you went to, say, through all of your elementary school years, was that a special kind of school or...
So Metropolitan Learning Center is in Northwest Portland. It's an alternative school. It's kindergarten through 12th grade. And it's a public school, but at least when I was there, they operated a little bit differently. Kids had a lot of freedom to choose what they wanted to do and when they wanted to do it. And the high school in particular had quite a bit of flexibility and freedom and a lot of creative, it fostered a lot of creativity and a lot of independent work. It was a wonderful place to be.
So when you had freedom to pick some of the things that you wanted to work at, what did you pick?
I actually honestly don't remember. So we got to pick all of our electives. So we had signups. And then we'd have a whole list of electives, and I got really good at knowing which ones would be popular, so I had to go there quickly first to get signed up if I wanted to go. And then we had project weeks where we did, like, there would be a trip camping in Mount Hood, or there would be building a village here at the school, or painting, or going and visiting various fountains in the city and thinking about them and exploring them together. So there's just all kinds of things that we would do in those sort of elective or project weeks. The thing that I really remember the most about MLC is something that was called Base Station. And I don't think they're still doing this, But there was one period in every day that was kindergarten through 12th grade. And so that was like a homeroom that we got to check in, but it was all of the age levels together in one room. So, I mean, we were split out, so it was maybe 20 or 30 people of all of the different ages. And so intergenerational interaction, that was a really rich experience for me as a child, and it has continued to be important to me.
Do you know how you happened to get into that school? Was it something that your parents had to apply for, or what's the story there?
Yeah, my oldest brother was not doing very well in his school in Beaverton, and he was in, I think, junior high or maybe early high school, because I'm 8 years younger than my next oldest brother. And so he wasn't doing well, and they applied to get him into a Metropolitan Learning Center where they thought maybe he would do a bit better, which he did. So he ended up getting in, and they have a sibling priority in their applications. And so when it came time for me to go to first grade, at first they didn't want to take me because of my hearing loss, but my mom talked them into it, and it ended up working out. But I was the first person with a hearing loss in the program. And at the time, mainstreaming wasn't really as common as it is now. It was before the Americans with Disabilities Act. And so part of it was that I didn't need any accommodation, which changed later. But so I got in because my brother was there. And so the first year I was there, my oldest brother was a senior in high school. My next brother was a sophomore, and then I was in first grade, and we were all in the same school at the same time, just for that 1 year.
So you just mentioned your hearing loss. Are you okay talking a little bit about that, when that happened, what the story with that is?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, so I had meningitis when I was about a year and a half old. My family took a family vacation to the Colorado Mountains and came back home, and I was sick when we came back home. So I spent a couple of weeks in the hospital, deathly ill. And when I came back, the only effect that lingered from that illness was that I didn't respond to sound. And gradually my hearing returned, but my mom noticed as I got older that I still didn't respond to all sounds a lot of the time. However, my mom and my brothers and my dad too really enjoyed language and played with language. And so my language development was considered normal. So it wasn't until I was in preschool that my hearing loss was diagnosed.
So they didn't even realize for a while how severe it was.
Yes.
And at that point in your life and during that time period, were there any things that could be done?
Yeah, so I have a moderate to severe hearing loss, which means that in high ranges without hearing aids, I hear very little in high pitches. But in low pitches, some of my hearing is almost normal. And speech sounds are kind of in the middle, and I'm kind of in the middle, there in the middle. So the recommendation at that time for me was to have hearing aids. And at that time, for speech development, they thought it would be good for me to route the sound that came into both of my ears into my better speech ear. So I hear speech sounds a little bit better with my left ear. And so I was fitted with a pair of hearing aids with a wire that connected my two ears. And so all the sound that came in from my right ear actually went into my left ear. And so, I don't know, that must have affected my brain development, because I still have a very hard time understanding speech with my right ear, but I learned how to understand speech through my left ear. And as I got older, that changed, and they fitted me with a different pair of hearing aids, and I got sound through both ears as it should be.
The technology has certainly advanced in these years.
Yeah.
Well, you do a fabulous job. I think people would not even realize anymore that you had any issues, which is amazing. So as you were growing up, and we're getting into the fall here, did your family ever go on any trips or vacations? Were there things that started to happen sort of in the fall of the year other than school that you remember?
Not particularly with the fall, no. I associate vacations, like going to the beach and stuff, with the summer. But yeah, I think fall was kind of, you know, getting back into school and getting back into work. And another part of my story is my parents split when I was quite young, and my dad remarried when I was 11. They had half custody of me each until I was in first grade. And at that point, it was really difficult for me to split my time half and half. So we went to a child psychologist who decided that my home was where my brothers were, and my brothers were primarily with my mom. So when I started grade school, my primary home became my mom's home, and then I was at my dad's weekends or every other weekend or something like that. And my mom, for some time, had a job at a school-based health clinic. And so she would have holidays and summers off in tandem with when I had time off. So that was a really wonderful thing. But yeah, I don't associate particular family things with the fall.
So your father remained here in the Portland area. So you always had a relationship with him. It's just that you weren't going back and forth on a day-by-day basis.
Exactly.
What was church like for you growing up? Was church a part of your growing up years, or what's the story with church?
It definitely was a part of my growing up. My mom became involved with an Episcopalian church, and my dad was involved with the Baptist church. And I have very fond memories of both of those traditions through my parents. And I think part of it is that what was meaningful for them was really obvious to me. And so that shaped my faith formation. And so my mom loved the ritual and the music and the liturgy. And when I learned to take communion in the Episcopalian church, it was just full of this most wonderful, sacred sense of being part of a community, a sense of the sacred being among us. And then with my dad, it was more personal prayer and learning how to have a conversation with Jesus. And that was really wonderful and amazing, too, and it really shaped me.
So you've been ecumenical sort of much of your life.
That's true. And then as a teenager, I became rebellious and also really did not like what I saw as a very patriarchal Christianity that I started reacting against what I decided Christianity was, which I have since come to understand is only one facet of Christianity. So I became much more, I don't know, I'd say I explored paganism, I explored atheism, but I would say I was agnostic more. Like, I had a sense of God, I had a sense of divine, but I was sort of anti-Christian for a while until I'm in my young adulthood.
So after you graduated from high school, what came next and how did you make that decision?
So in high school, I reached burnout, I think primarily with my hearing loss. So going through school mainstreamed without accommodations was really difficult for me. I did graduate from high school, but I was completely exhausted. And so I was actually suicidal and depressed for a good number of years because I didn't see how I could manage keeping on going. And I didn't have a lot of hope for it changing. So I went straight into college, but college was, again, a stressful school environment. And later on in my graduate studies, I returned to college in 2006. And it was far enough after the Americans with Disabilities Act that I had appropriate accommodation, which was captioning, which made all of the difference in school for me. So I really fumbled around as an early adult and dealt with significant depression. And I didn't really have a good sense of direction. I stayed at home. My mom actually moved out before I did. And it was a really difficult time for me. But about 4 years after high school, I got my first sort of full-time job. And that was a huge turning point for me to realize that, oh, not everything is as stressful as school. I can actually survive. I can make a living. I can go to work, do my thing, come home. And that was a huge turning point for me.
What kind of a job was that?
I loved it. It was working for a small company here in the Portland area that was actually employee owned. We purchased books from publishers and supplied them to libraries. So it was a big warehouse. And I had the job of doing the technical processing, which was putting on spine labels and security devices and property stamps. There was a little team of us doing that. And so the library would tell us which stamps to put where, you know, if we put pockets in the backs of the books, or, you know, a property stamp on page 96 of every book, or things like that. And so I had a little profile for all of the different libraries. We would supply that library with 20 books, and I'd do all of those things to those 20 books.
And this was pre-computers. There were computers, I'm sure, but you weren't actually working on computers most of the time. Is that true?
There were computers. Most of my work was physical with the books, but we used computers, word processing to develop the profiles for each library. We communicated with libraries by email, kept track of our hours, things like that. So there were computers.
I've never even heard of this job. How did you find it? Do you remember?
I am certain it was probably in the Oregonian. It was like a job listing somewhere, and I applied for it. And my boss said that what had stood out on my resume is I had, or maybe in my cover letters, I had said that I had made books myself, which told her that I liked working with my hands and that I liked books. And so she was really looking for people that would be interesting and fit in with her team. And it did work out very well.
So at some point, you found the Mennonites. What's that story?
Yeah, so I probably won't go into all of that story, but I was dating a person who had grown up Mennonite, and we fell on hard times, and our relationship didn't survive those hard times. But I was really we were homeless for some time. We were doing drugs for some time, and I was on the way to getting clean. And his family introduced us to Bruce Harder. His family knew Bruce Harder from Ohio, Bluffton, Ohio. And so Bruce got family in touch with Pastor Rod, who then helped us figuring out sort of really basic things, where we were going to be that night, where we were going to get food, things like that. And so it was really part of my journey of coming out of that dark period of my life that I became involved at Portland Mennonite. And we went to Rod for some couples counseling, and our relationship, again, didn't survive. But I started coming to worship, and the hymnal, the music was really meaningful for me. People were really friendly, but not too friendly. So I could come and just sit and be left alone if I wanted to be left alone, but people were still friendly and letting me know that I was welcome. And I went to a welcome lunch at Phil and Jesse's house and got involved in a small group and just kept coming. And here I am. That was about 17 years ago.
So when you found Portland Mennonite, was this the first time since you had sort of given up on religion, organized religion? I won't say you gave up on God. I don't know if that was true or not. But was this the first time when you sort of stuck your toe back into some kind, even a church building?
I had gone to Episcopalian services with my mom as a teenager and as a young adult. So I wouldn't say that I had not been to church services or in church buildings. But I had a really hard time hearing scriptures as not being like a finger pointing at me, telling me how I should be living my life with some very problematic messages. Until after I started coming to Portland Mennonite, I had a Bible my grandparents had given me, and I flipped through it from time to time. And I was reading Psalm 139 one day, where it has a passage, "Wherever you go, there I am." And it's a very poetic set of verses. And I realized, suddenly in that moment, I realized, oh, the Bible isn't telling me you should, you should, you should. It's really describing the human condition and describing a way of being in relationship with God, no matter where you are, in good times and in bad times. And so that shifted my whole relationship to the Bible and scriptures, and I hear them differently now.
And speaking of your relationship to the Bible, you're in seminary, aren't you?
I was in seminary. That was one of the casualties of this past year and a half, is that I'm no longer in seminary. I failed out of a class, and my grades hadn't been very good to begin with going into last year. And when the pandemic hit in March of 2020, it just became too much for me to carry the class load that I was carrying, which wasn't much, but it was in addition to work. So I failed seminary last spring and was actually dismissed. So that was a really difficult period of time for me in that way, and I've grieved that. I can reapply if I want to, but I have to show that I've made progress in writing academic papers on time. I do very well writing academic papers, but I don't do well at writing them on time.
Well, and it's not like your life hasn't been busy with just your work and just life in the last year and a half either. So
it's true.
What led you to even consider seminary? Your journey is just so amazing. Like, what was your plan? What was your idea?
So I finished a degree in conflict resolution. In 2006, I went back to school to finish my bachelor's degree, which I did in peace studies, or it was liberal studies, but most of my classes were peace studies. And I realized as that came to an end that I really had a lot of questions about conflict resolution and peace activism. So I went ahead and applied for the graduate program at Portland State University in conflict resolution. I got my master's degree. I finished that in 2016. As that came to an end, I started looking at what next. And right about then, we had a pastoral search going on here at Portland Mennonite, and several people tapped me on the shoulder and said, "You'd be a great pastor. Have you ever considered this?" And in fact, I had been considering it because the open position just sort of called to me. I was really compelled by it and wondering whether it would be something I could do. And so in consultation with Pastor Rod, as I was discerning what that all meant for me, I decided the next step was seminary. And so that was what took me to the doorstep of the seminary. And a seminary has been absolutely wonderful.
And I hope that at some point down the road somewhere, if that's of interest to you, that you're able to have the time and energy to devote to it, if that's something that you would find of interest. I have like 1,000 questions and we don't have that many minutes left, but in terms of this whole peace stance or the peace message or conflict resolution, was that something new to you when you came to PMC, or was that something that had been in your life and just kind of mulling in your brain previous to that?
No, I've been a pacifist most of my life, and what was new to me was defining it in religious terms. Yeah, I have so much I could say about that that I don't know where to begin. But yeah, that I think that was one of the things that resonated for me about Portland Mennonite, is that a lot of people really living out a focus on peace and justice.
With religious overtones, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Mennonites in particular don't have to quibble about all the theology behind it, but it's really more about being faithful in relationship to God to really walk out doing peace and justice. And that really attracted me.
So you've now been in the PMC office for a number of years. How long have you been in this particular job as our congregational administrator?
I've been here for 5 years. I started 2 months before Pastor Britt came in. So 5 years.
As you look ahead, and if time and money and none of that matters, in 5 or 10 years, is there something on your bucket list or someplace that you'd like to be? Not necessarily geographically or possibly in your life, like what would make you really happy?
I love art. And when I stopped going to seminary and I had a little more free time and a couple of people close to me died last year, I started making more time for drawing and art. And last winter, that kind of fell by the wayside. But in 5 years from now, I really want a significant amount of my time really seriously to be doing art, whether that's writing poetry or drawing or painting or photography. Yeah, that's what I want ahead of me.
Well, as you said, there are so many more stories. We might have to do a part two with Rachel. I keep promising part twos and they haven't happened yet, but what an amazing journey you've been on, and how very blessed and grateful we are. I'm just going to speak for the congregation here to have you in the position that you are in, that you've been in for the last 5 years. It feels like you have just grown and blossomed in that position. You have, especially for the last 18 months, your technical know-how and curiosity and willingness are just beyond compare. We are so indebted to you for all that you've done to keep us together as a congregation and what you continue to do on a weekly basis, putting out the bulletin and all the myriad things that happen in that church office. And especially there have been some transitions again lately, and you're one of the steady hands. So thank you so much for all of what you do for us at Portland Mennonite. And thank you especially for being my guest today on COVID Chronicles.
I am really, truly blessed to be here at Portland Mennonite, and it was really a blessing to be talking with you today, Gloria. Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.